Jesus Christ predicted earthquakes in different places. He predicted there will be wars, rumors of wars. There will be famines. But the end was not yet. Usually when you have a famine, right after a famine, a huge crop failure, you have disease epidemics, pestilence. And the Bible talks about that. In the book of Ezekiel, chapter 5, verse 12, the Bible says here, Ezekiel predicted this. 1/3 of you will die by the pestilence. The New American Standard says plague, same Hebrew word translated pestilence. Or be consumed by the famine among you. 1/3 shall fall by the sword around you, and 1/3 will I scatter to every wind, and I will unsheath the sword behind him. So 1/3 falls by famine and disease. The other third falls by sword, and the other third are scattered. Now here's in Jeremiah chapter 21, verse 6. I shall strike down the inhabitants of this city, both man and beast, and they will die with great pestilence. And how would you interpret this? If in your world, if in your country, 1/3 of the people died by pestilence, how would you interpret it? How would you interpret it if in some cities, more than 1/3, half of the people died? How would you interpret it when graveyards filled up, bodies were thrown onto burial pits and were dug into a dumping place where they dumped the corpses? What would you say if so many people were dying that the living could not, in fact, bury, they did not have enough people to bury the dead? What would you say if such a plague hit and such a pestilence that some people went to bed healthy and were dead the next morning? And that people wouldn't get near or next to someone who was their own relative when they saw this plague, this pestilence get them. They would leave them, walk away from them, would not be in their presence. They had the bodies were laid on boards. There were not enough coffins, so bodies were laid on voids. Families dumped their own relatives into pits and buried them. This actually happened, you know. What I'm talking about is actual, factual, documented history. 1/3 of the people of Europe in the 1300s died. Over 10 million people. So many people died that some of the small villages were actually totally wiped out, and the grass and the weeds just began to cover it and just grew, and you just had a very few remains to even know that there was a village there. So many people died that cattle, chickens, pigs, and sheep were often running around because there were no people to tend to them. They ran wild and just started going everywhere because they had to find food. So many people died, and nobody seemed to know what it was. When a little boat came into the harbor close to Italy there, the men who were manning the oars, all of a sudden people looked at them, and this is what they had. The diseased sailors showed strange black swellings about the size of an egg or an apple in the armpits and in their groin. The swellings oozed blood and pus and were followed by spreading boils and black blotches and the skin from the internal bleeding. The sick suffered severe pain and died quickly within 5 days. You catch this, the symptoms, and 5 days later, from the first symptoms, as the disease spread, other symptoms of continuous fever and spitting up of blood appeared instead of some swellings. These victims coughed, sweated heavily, and died even more quickly within 3 days when they started coughing up the blood. This is called the bubonic plague, okay? Called the Black Death. The Black Death spread so fast, so quickly, that the people just, it was astounding. And people couldn't explain it. They didn't understand it. The physical swellings, either it was in the lymph nodes and in the swelling up under the arms and in the groin, or it got into the lungs. It even got into animals so that sheep were dead. The village parishes, people, and the priests didn't know what to do. Priests and clergy did not, there weren't enough clergy to give rites for the dead. And listen to this. This is a record of someone who wrote during that time. He said, one man shunned another. Kinsfolk stayed, held aloof. Brother was forsaken by brother, oftentimes husband by wife. Nay, what is more, and scarcely to be believed, fathers and mothers were found to abandon their own children on their fate, unintended, unvisited, as if they were strangers. The Pope's physician wrote this, and he's not one given to exaggeration, but he said this. He was a sober and careful observer what was reported, and he said, a father did not visit his son, nor the son his father. Charity was dead. Because what would happen is they realized that here were physicians who came over. Sometimes a physician would come over and try to help someone, and in the process, the physician would catch it, and he was dead before the person he was trying to help. That often happened. It was so astounding. And then added to this, no one seemed to know why. No one seemed to know why. What could help? What is the process here? Cities, all of these huge cities, and it was worse in cities, and even worse in enclosed institutions like convents and in the seminaries, monasteries, and in prisons. It just went like wildfire when people couldn't get away from one another, and people started running away. As soon as they see somebody with it, I get away from you, I don't want to catch it. So even if it was your aunt, your uncle, your brother, your sister, leave them, get away from them. And what did they call it? They said it was the end of the world. That's how many people were dying. They couldn't bury them. This is the end of the world. This, they said, was God's punishment. We don't know where it came from. We don't know how it was. We've got to get away from it. And the disease of the bubonic plague spread throughout Europe, killing one third. To the people, there was but one explanation. It was the wrath of God. To other people, it was that maybe the planets didn't line up. But to the average person, God is punishing us for our sins. Now, the worst part of it was that they not only experienced this plague, but prior to the plague, they had a huge earthquake that devastated long parts of Italy all the way up into Switzerland and other places. There was a huge earthquake that devastated towns and so on. And then after that, there were crop failures, huge crop failures that brought famine all over, you know, to a great large section of Europe. And then the next thing, wham, you had this plague right on top of it. The pestilence that spread so fast and so quickly. And no one seemed to know why. And no one seemed to know what you do. What do you do with it? We now know why, right? It was spread from rats. Rats and fleas from rats and infections and people who handled rats, and they had some kind of thing, and it would get into the lymph nodes and swell, or it would get into the lungs. And it spread from person to person. Now, I want you to just read with me a plague that was on the Philistines. I'm going to go back to 1 Samuel, and I want to change my view of this situation. This is in 1 Samuel chapter 5, beginning in verse 6. I'm going to read all the way through to chapter 6. Now the hand of the Eternal was heavy on the Ashdodites, and he ravaged them and smote them with, now the King James says emerods, and you can say that those are hemorrhoids, but The actual truth is that that word can mean swelled up areas. And therefore, the New American Standard Version, the New International Version, the New English Translation, in other words, uses the word tumors. He ravaged them and smote them with tumors, both Ashdod and its territories. When the men of Ashdod saw that it was so, they said, "The ark of God of Israel must remain with us, for his hand is severe on us, and must not remain with us." I mean, we got to get rid of this ark. His hand is severe on us and on Dagon, our God. So they went and gathered the lords of the Philistines and to them, and they said, "What shall we do with the ark of God?" And they said, "Let the ark of God, you know, let the ark of the God of Israel be brought around to Gath." And they brought the ark of the God of Israel around. After that, they brought it around to the hand of the Eternal was against the city with very great confusion. By the way, in the descriptions of people writing the chronicles of the bubonic plague, they said that there were many people seeing so many people dead, they just walked around as if crazy. They were mad with craziness. They couldn't understand it. They didn't know what happened. And people are dying. Relatives are dying. People are dying. And the workers, there were hardly any laborers. People could not, you know, so many workers died that they didn't have enough to finish buildings that they'd started. Churches that they wanted to finish a tower on, a cathedral. They didn't have, the workers were dead. What do you do? It was devastating. And here the Philistines say, "We got to get rid of this ark of God." And they brought it around and they said this, "After they had brought it around, the hand of God was against the city with very great confusion, and he smote the men of the city, both young and old, so that tumors broke out on them." More than hemorrhoids, more than a little case of, you know, you need some preparation H. This is devastating. I want you to read it with me, because so they sent the ark of God to Ekron. And as the ark of God came to Ekron, the Ekronites cried out, saying, "They have brought the ark of God of Israel to us, to kill us." And everywhere that ark of God came, here came these plagues, these pestilence, these diseases, to kill us. Notice what they're saying. Not to give us a hard time when we sit down. No, it's to kill us. These are plagues that are swelling up. And it's a tumor that is swelling. It sounds to me very much like a black death. "The ark of God around us to kill us and our people." And they sent, therefore, and gathered the lords of the Philistines and said, "Send away the ark of God of Israel and let it return to its own place so that it will not kill us and our people." We're dying here. Our cities are dying here. "For there was a deadly confusion throughout the city. The hand of God was very heavy there. And the men who did not die were smitten with tumors, and the cry of the city went up to heaven." The people who didn't die were still had some of the tumors. "Now the ark of God had been in the country of the Philistines 7 months, and the Philistines called for the priests and the diviners, saying, 'What shall we do with the ark of God? Tell us, so that we can send it back to its place.' And they said, 'If you send it away, send away the ark of God of Israel, do not send it empty, but you shall surely return to him a guilt offering. Then you shall be healed, and it shall be known to you why his hand is not removed from you.' Then they said, 'What shall be the guilt offering with which we shall return to him?' And they said, 5 golden tumors," make out of gold, the swelling tumors that are on people. "And," listen to this, 5 golden rodents. The word is mice sometimes, but the word should be, it's a word that can mean rodents. Notice that. Why are we sending tumors, swelled up tumors, and rodents? To give you kind of a clue, where did the bubonic plague come from? Came from rats. What is happening here in the book in the Philistines? Rats. Rodents. And people are now dying. They're not worried about hemorrhoids and being uncomfortable. You don't die from hemorrhoids, brethren. You die from tumors. You die from the bubis that are swelled up. The bubis just means groin tumors. And they're tumors that swell up. And they get in the blood. And this plague gets in the blood. So you got to send him this guilt offering, 5 golden tumors and 5 golden rodents, according to the number of the lords of the Philistines, for one plague was on all of you and on your Lord. The same plague was on all of you, with the rodents and with the tumors. So you shall make a likeness of your tumors and the likeness of your rodents that ravage the land. It's not just an occasion. It ravaged the land. The tumors ravaged the land. The rodents ravaged the land. And that you shall give glory to the God of Israel. Perhaps he will ease his hand from you, your gods, and your land. Why then should you harden your hearts as Egyptians and Pharaoh hardened their hearts? Then he severely dealt with them. And he did not allow the people to go, and they departed. Now, therefore, take and prepare a new cart and 2 milk cows and white and that were never put to yoke, and hitch the cows and the cart and their calves away, and take the cart from the Eternal, take the Ark of the Eternal and place it on the cart, and put the articles of gold that you're going to return to him as a guilt offering in the box on the side, then send it away that it may go. Watch it. Watch if it goes by the way. And in the territory to Beth-Hamish, then he has done us a great evil. But if not, then we will know that it was not his hand that struck us. It happened to us by chance. Then by the men took these milk cows, hitched them up, and they put them on the ark of the Lord in the box, and the golden mice, the golden rodents, and the likenesses of their tumors. And the cows took this straight away, and they went directly to Beth-Shemesh, and they went along the highway, lowing as they went, and did not turn aside. So they said, that means that God's hand was really on us. Now God will relieve us. This is not by chance. And the lords of the Philistines followed them to the border of Beth-Shemesh, which was now in Israel. Now the people of Beth-Hamish were reaping their wheat harvest in the valley, and they raised their eyes, and they saw the ark, and they were glad to see it. The ark came, so on. And the Levites took the ark down in verse 15, and then the 5 lords, and they returned. So here was this great thing. And notice verse 17. These are the golden tumors which the Philistines returned for a guilt offering to the Eternal. One for Ashdod, one for Gaza, one for Ashkelon, one for Gath, and one for Ekron. And the golden rodents, according to the number of the cities of the Philistines belonging to the 5 lords. The large stone was set on the ark of the Lord, and so on and so on. So they sent what was the essence of their plague. What was the essence of their plague? Lots of rodents and all these swelled up tumors that were in them. It sounds very much like the Black Plague. Diseases are well documented in the scriptures. Diseases, afflictions. The Bible really says a lot about them. Tremendous amount. This is a quotation from a physician to the Pharaoh of Egypt. It's a quotation. It goes like this, and he said this. When old age descends upon you, slowness of movement appears. The eyes become dim, the ears hard of hearing. Muscles become weak, every movement is difficult, and the spirit is forgetful, that is the mind, is forgetful and cannot even remember yesterday. This was said, 4,600 years ago, And now this guy that said this, you would have thought he was just, really one of the, poorest in health. However, documents show that he lived to be more than 100 years old. And he really only suffered in the very last of his age, the last of his days, this thing. For most of his life, he was probably healthy. Looks like he was healthy. You don't get to 100 years old being very sickly, you know. So to get to 100 years old, he must have been healthy most of his life. And in the last part of his life, he writes this. This is what happens when you get really old. You can't hear very well. You can't see very well. Every movement is hard. You get tired really easily. The muscles are weak. Now, there are classified in the books of the International Classification of Diseases, there are classified over 100,000, I'm going to round it out, 100,000 diseases are listed, very specifically listed. You think, well, I got to worry about 100,000 diseases? Yeah, that's something, you know, we've documented all these various diseases around the world, 100,000 of them. You ought to see a book. There's a book that thick I was privileged to look at when I was in Oklahoma, and this doctor let me look at his books. And it was all about skin diseases. It was that thick, about the various kinds of skin diseases. You'd be surprised how many different kinds of skin diseases there are. Manifested out, the skin can do this and do that and do this way and that way. However, you don't need to worry about the bottom 99,990. You just need to worry about the top 10. Because the top 10 in the United States and in most civilized countries are the ones that do the most damage. Here they are. Heart disease of all types. Cancer. Number one is heart. Number two is cancer. Number three is stroke. Number four, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. That is, people can't breathe. Number five, accidents. Number six, diabetes. Number seven, influenza and pneumonia. Still a problem. Number six was diabetes. Number seven was influenza. Number eight is Alzheimer's disease. Number nine, kidney disease. People fail, their kidneys fail, and they die. And number six, septicemia, which is blood infection, some kind of blood disease. You get a bacteria in your blood. You know, one of our relatives, my wife's sister's, the oldest sister, she went into the hospital for a simple gallbladder operation. And we said goodbye to her, and then we came back here. We were back here for about a week, and then, you know, we had a call that said, you better come right away. She's been given 24 hours to live. And Molly had to go. She got on the plane, left before me. I had to clean up some situations, and then I came 2 days later. Molly never got there in time for her. She was dead already. Septicemia, she got infection in her blood, and she died. Reducing the risk, then, for the top 10, these top 10, is your key to a long and healthy life. Now, you know, we've made a lot of progress in some civilizations, in our what we call civilizations. We've gone backward in some ways. We went forward in a lot of ways. Sanitary living conditions, good sewer systems, fresh, clean water, protection from the elements, quarantines. We've learned to quarantine people. Get them off them. You put them aside. Controlling infections have eliminated most infectious diseases. You've probably heard that more people, more soldiers died in the Civil War. More Americans died in the Civil War than any other war. What do you think the leading cause of death in the Civil War was? Dysentery. The soldiers drank something, ate something, and it just, you know, they had dysentery and infections, and they died from the dysentery. The Bible talks a lot about disease. However, it does not doesn't get too narrow, too specific. You know, in some cases, the Bible just talks about it, be like you say, what's wrong with him? And somebody will say, he's sick, you know, he's sick. So the Bible often doesn't get too specific. In some places it does, but a lot of places it doesn't. When Jesus went out to heal, people came to Jesus to be healed. And it says, many of them came and they had, quote, diseases. That's all. I mean, they were sick. and healed them of various diseases. It doesn't say what they were. It doesn't list them in the categories like we have today. It's just a general idea that many of them were diseased. It talks in broad terms with categories. And we can only guess what the specifics are. Here's one. It looks like to me, I don't know, a heart attack. I'll let you decide. You remember a guy by the name of Nabal. Nabal was the wife of Abigail. Abigail was a very, very lovely woman, evidently, and intelligent and smart. But Nabal was kind of a, jerk, if we can say. And you remember that David, because Nabal insulted David's men, David was going to come in there and kill him. And one of the men told Abigail, and she ran out to see David, and she said, my Lord, don't do that. We know he's a fool. It's not worth it for you to kill him, And here's, take these things. Take this for your family, to your kids. For your soldiers, for your people. And here, take all these gifts. I've got cakes and raisins and this and that to feed you. And please take all this bread and all that and spare his life. So David said, okay. So in 1 Samuel chapter 25, verse 35. So David received from her hand what she had brought him and said to her, go up to your house in peace. See, I have listened to you and granted your request. I'm not going to kill your husband. Okay? Then Abigail said to Nabal, and behold, he was... Now, she wanted to come in. She came to Nabal, rather. She comes to Nabal, and behold, he was holding a feast in his house. She wanted to tell him about David and all that. Like the feast of a king. He was there, he was just, eaten up. Evidently, he was fairly wealthy, and he was eaten up and drinking up. And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. Very drunk. So she did not tell him anything. You're so drunk, I can't talk to you until the morning. And she didn't tell him anything until the morning light. But verse 37, but in the morning, when the wine had gone out of Nabal, his wife told him these things, and his heart died within him, so that he became like a stone. About 10 days later, the Bible says, the Eternal struck Nabal, and he died. What happened to a guy? What happens to you if you drink too much? You drink and drink and drink, and you're so drunk, and then you get something that is really angers you and just infuriates you so much. When you're drinking, you're wiping out the B vitamins. You're wiping out all the nutrients that you need for a good, crisp heartbeat. You drink too much and all that happens. Now, a little wine, a little liquor, you drink one drink, one, two drinks, that nobody cares. I'm talking, he's very, the Bible didn't say he was just drunk. It used the word very drunk. Very drunk. And he must do that regularly. He probably did that a lot. And his heart died within him. He became like a stone. Whether he had some kind of a serious heart attack, whether he just went into this, something happened in his heart. And then God mercifully just struck him, let him die. Let me read that in the New English Translation. In the morning when Nabal was sober, I'm reading from verse 37. In the morning when Nabal was sober, his wife told him about these matters. Here's how the New English Translation translates. He had a stroke and was paralyzed. He had a stroke. Paralyzed. Now, one of the ways you have a stroke is a blood clot from the heart goes up and hits the head, the brain. You can have a blood clot that moves in. It can clot inside the blood. It can travel right through the bloodstream. Right through the arteries. It hit the brain and you have a stroke from the brain. You can also have a stroke, in your heart. I'll let that sound go by. So you can have a stroke. In other words, as your heart is pounding, you could create a blood clot. You know, the Bible, the body has to clot. It's miraculous, really. I think it's a proof of God and God's creation that when you cut your finger, as I did the other day, on reaching into my file drawers and trying to reach in, and I sliced it on, one of those files. I hate that. I hate that when it happens. But it bled, and I had to put some Kleenex or something on it, and I held it real tight, and it clotted. It clots up. Now, isn't that miraculous that it will clot here? We don't want it clotting in here and in here. Miraculous that it would clot here. So how does the Bible, how does the body know to do that? How does it know to clot here but not here? It's really an amazing instrument. As David said, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. But here's what he says. In the morning, when Nabal was sober, his wife told him about these matters. He had a stroke and was paralyzed. Stroke and was paralyzed. Now, we see that mental disease is also described in the Bible. Mental disease. People can become paranoid. People can become, they start thinking wrong. They start getting crazy. They start thinking crazy, and they end up crazy. You remember how Saul was with David? You remember that? Saul got paranoid and crazier about David. But David also knew how to act crazy, didn't he? We saw that one time when he was in front of Achish. He was there in front of Achish, and Achish said, I want to kill you. And then what it says in 1 Samuel chapter 21, verses 12 and 13, and David took these words to heart. He got frightened. And he greatly feared Achish, king of Gath, so he disguised his sanity before them and acted insanely in their hands, and scribbled on the doors of the gates and let his saliva run down his beard. He just kind of acted crazy. People can act crazy. You can imitate crazy. Or you can actually be crazy. Now, the Bible talks about various diseases. There are diseases, and some of them happen to children. There are children's diseases. Take a look at 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 18 through 21. When the child was grown, the day came that he went out to his father to the reapers. And he said to his father, my head, my head. This is in 1 Kings chapter 4. No, 2 Kings, I'm sorry, 2 Kings chapter 4. And 2 Kings chapter 4. So here was the Shunammite woman, and in verse 18, 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 18, the Shunammite's son, okay, in verse 18, when the child was grown, and this is in the time of Elisha the prophet, he goes out and he says to his father, he's just talking to his father, and all of a sudden he says, my head, my head. And his servant began to carry him, said, carry him to his mother. When he was taken to his mother and brought him to his mother, he sat on her lap until noon and then died. My head, my head. I have a dear friend who lost his daughter at age 13. She developed a tumor in her brain. And that tumor grew and grew until it killed her. She lasted 7 years with modern medical treatment, operations, chemotherapy, radiation therapy, and steroids and so on. But she died at age 21. No, at age 20. 7 years from age 13 to age 20. And she was a beautiful young woman when she died at age 20. My head, my head, he said. And so carry him into his mother, and he died. And of course, Elisha then goes on to heal him. In 1 Kings chapter 17, beginning in verse 17. Now it came about that after these things, the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, her son became sick. And his sickness was so severe that there was no breath left in him. He couldn't breathe anymore. So she said to Elijah, Now, this is the time of Elijah. This is in 1 Kings. What do I have to do with you, O man of God? You've come to me to bring my iniquity to remembrance, to put my son to death. Have you come here to show me all my faults and to kill my kid? And he said to her, give me your son. And he took him from her bosom and carried him up to the upper room where he was living and laid him on his bed. And he called to the Lord and said, O Lord, my God, have you also brought calamity to the widow with whom I'm staying by causing her son to die? Then he stretched himself upon the child three times and called the Eternal and called on the Lord and said, O Lord, my God, I pray you, let this child's life return to him. And the Lord heard the voice of Elijah, and the life of the child returned to him, and he revived. And Elijah took the child and brought him down from the upper room into the house and gave him to his mother. And Elijah said, see, your son is alive. Then the woman said to Elijah, now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Eternal is in your mouth is truth. The word that is in your mouth is truth. Sometimes children get sick. Children can have a stroke. Children can have a disease. Children can have a tumor. Definitely, the Bible talks about infirmities. You know, there's one category. There's diseases, and then there are infirmities. An infirmity may not be a disease. It may just be you may be born deformed. You can have a deformity, which is kind of an infirmity. You can have an accident where you get your eye knocked out or both eyes knocked out. You can have something else happen to you where you... But take a look at the book of Leviticus. This sounds cruel in our day, but it really wasn't, because it had to do with who's going to administer before God. Here it is, Leviticus chapter 21, verses 16 through 21. Then the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, speak to Aaron, saying, no man of your offspring throughout their generations who has a defect shall approach to offer the bread of his God. For no one who has a defect shall approach. A blind man, or a lame man, or he who has a disfigured face, or any deformed limb, or a man who has a broken foot or a broken hand, or a hunchback or a dwarf, or one who has a defect in his eye, or eczema or scabs on his skin, or crushed testicles. No man among the descendants of Aaron the priest who has a defect is to come near to offer the Eternal's offerings by fire. Since he has a defect, he shall not come near to offer the bread of God. That's just the way it was. Why? Well, God said, well, you had to do these performances. You had to, you had to get up there and do the things, and you had to do them right. And, you know, you can see somebody who has a defect, can't do it right. He's blind. Are you going to have a blind man up there offering offerings? He's deaf, he can't hear. What is he going to, or are you going to have a lame man who can't walk? What are you going to do in those days? So he said, no, you can't have that. So, but the point I'm trying to make here is that there were defects, that there were deformities. There were people who were blind from an accident or some other reason. There were people who were deaf. There were people who had disfigurements. They had some problem with their face. They had disfigurements. There are. And if you haven't had that, you know, thank God for it. If you've ever seen people who had disfigurements or lost limbs, you can be thankful that you're not in that category. One of David's very favorite people, one of his favorite, well, the favorite person in the world, and above every one of his wives even, was Jonathan. Remember Jonathan? He said, your love to me is greater than the love of a woman. We're so close. We're so kindred. But even Jonathan's son, his name was Mephibosheth, and he was just deformed. Take a look at 2 Samuel chapter 4 and verse 4. Now Jonathan Saul's son, had a son crippled in his feet. He was 5 years old when the report of Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. And his nurse ran. If you remember that Saul and Jonathan both got killed in this battle, the news came back that, you know, Saul is dead, Jonathan is dead. And it happened that in her hurry to flee, he fell and became lame. In her hurry to flee, she fell with him. He fell and he broke his feet, maybe broke his leg. And his name was Mephibosheth. And so he was lame the rest of his life. He couldn't go in, you know. It's like one of the things you have to avoid. What are one of the things you have to avoid? If you want to live a healthy life, you have to avoid accidents. You've got to be careful where you step, what you do, that you don't fall, that you don't get in a car accident. We have, one of the great fears is, and it's no fault of yours, if somebody pulls into you and hits you. You're lucky if you don't, that doesn't happen to you, but you have to be careful. Trucks don't seem to care. Other SUVs and things don't seem to care. You can get very easily hurt on the freeway or other places. I see a really bad accident on streets here, and somebody was very severely hurt. We'll talk more about diseases, living a long time, what the Bible has to say about it, and what you can do today in our modern world to preserve yourself. Because most of us want to live a long, healthy life. All right, we'll talk more about that in our next sermon.